Good friend of mine who we serve together here at David Gospel sent me something called an old farmer's advice, and I know we're looking for some good pithy statements to help us in our planning of 2009, so maybe some of these will help you out. You've probably been looking for some of these. The first one says to keep skunks and bankers at a distance. I'm a former banker. I don't know how to take that. Now, for you urban types, this next one might be hard to understand. Life is simpler when you plow around the stump. Think about that. And a bumblebee is considerably faster than a John Deere tractor. Words that soak into your ears are whispered, not yelled. And it don't take a very big person to carry a grudge. This is a good one coming from all our family gatherings. Don't judge folks by their relatives. Aren't you glad? If you find yourself in a hole, the first thing to do is stop digging. Yeah, I like this next one, you can tell. Always drink upstream from the herd. And lastly, if you get to thinking you're a person of some influence, just try ordering somebody else's dog around. Well, today we want to look at sort of a clarion call, an anthem statement of Paul, in Philippians 3, verses 10 through 14. I don't think the whole text is on the screen, so I'm going to read this for us. Paul said, I want to know Christ, yes, to know the power of his resurrection and participation in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. Not that I have already obtained all this or have already arrived at my goal, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do. Forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. Now, next week, I'm going to be focusing on the pressing forward towards the prize, but I want to take that statement, forgetting what is behind, and unpack that a little bit this morning. And I've entitled today's message, Keeping the Past in the Past. This is a natural time of year for many of us to be looking up or looking into wrapping up last year's business. Perhaps you're trying to get all your receipts together, either because you need to return something you bought or because you need to start getting ready for tax season. That made you happy, didn't it? Or you're just trying to, like Michael said, maybe you know, typically this is the time of year, the health clubs become flooded, Memorial Park becomes inundated with new runners. Like myself, I started a little bit before my son-in-law Brandon introduced me to Memorial Park, and I really like it. If you can find a parking spot, it's a great place to meet a lot of new friends. But beyond that, trying to think about this forgetting what is behind, Paul utilizing a lot of athletic imagery here, trying to exhort the church community at Philippi onward by modeling in his own life. And earlier in that chapter, Paul talks about the things that I used to think were, successful, that were, pluses, that were sort of stars on his resume, and sort of counting all that is nothing anymore. But Paul also had to deal with some other issues of his past and moving forward, probably unique that none of us might have to deal with. And, Paul was one of the chief antagonists of the church at one time and was probably personally responsible for a lot of harm and injury and maybe even death of a lot of believers. And I just have to believe that's something Paul had to carry with him his whole life and continue to give it to God. You know, we all have a past. We all have a story. And our past is not what we want it to be. Our past is not what it should be or could be. Our past is what it is, both good and bad. In this church, we offer two courses, and this is not a shameless plug for them, but there are two courses I think that help a lot. One is Cross Current, that is kind of headed up by Beth Hoover, and the other one, Living Waters, is headed up by Patsy Gospel. And one of the things about our past is that with God's help and time, we begin to gain some perspective. But we only gain that perspective in the light of what Jesus Christ has afforded to us. But even as Christians, I think the past is something that we wrestle with a lot. It's hard to learn how to accept it, to learn from it, without allowing it to define us. It's so easy, especially if it was a very painful, a very difficult, a very trying, maybe the most difficult time in your life, to almost that becomes kind of, you know, the reason you are where you are and why you are what you are is because something happened. I remember as a youngster growing up, we had some next door neighbors and they lived in Texas City and they're really nice people. Their last name was James. But I remember that you wouldn't talk to them very long and they would begin to talk about, I don't even remember what hurricane it was that came into Texas City and kind of wiped them out financially. And that ever since then, they've been trying to rebuild. Well, some of us had, you now have Ike to have as an experience, and certainly that's part of our life, but we don't want it to define our life. You know, I was thinking also about driving an automobile in a very intense traffic urban area like Houston. And you know, we have something on our car. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, it's required equipment that's inspected when you get your annual safety inspection, and that's called a side view mirror and a rear view mirror. And those are really helpful to have. And you often don't realize how helpful they are to when either one is broken or damaged or you don't have it. I have an old pickup truck. It's a 1984 Chevy Silverado, actually belonged to Glow's grandfather. And so it has a lot of sentimental value as well as just being a great old truck. But it has one of those rear view mirrors that it adheres to the windshield with just an epoxy resin. And so if you bump it or something, it's really easy to pop off and you can't just glue it on there with anything. And so by the time you get around to the AutoZone or something and get that epoxy again, you know, you're usually driving around a little bit without it. And it's amazing, you know, you get used to having that up there and you don't have that rear view mirror to refer to. But you know, no matter how good your rear view mirror is or how good your side view mirrors are, your most important view on the road is looking ahead and seeing what's in front of you, seeing what you're going to be dealing with. And so that's what we sort of want to focus on this morning. Jesus talks about in Luke's gospel in chapter 9 and verse 62, he's talking about discipleship and says that no one who puts a hand to the plow and looks back is fit for service in the kingdom of God. And again, for us non-rural, non-agricultural farming types, we might kind of wonder what that's about. And I really think, of course, Jesus was talking in the whole context of discipleship, but one of the things is you can't plow very well looking back over your shoulder. My grandfather was a small acreage farmer, and he was sort of known in the area for his plowing skills, initially with a mule. And I learned from him that actually mules are quite superior to horses, both in plowing and also in riding. And then eventually with a tractor, and of course his favorite was Massey Ferguson, not John Deere. And I spent a summer with them. We used to live up in the suburbs of Long Island, New York. And I came down this summer. And of course, you can imagine everything was a new experience. I mean, they had a well you drew water out of. And he plowed out in the garden. And so every day was just a new experience. And I remember asking Granddad, I said, Granddad, how do you plow so straight? You know, how do you plow over the contours of the fields and yet you always plow such straight lines? And he told me something, obviously, I've never forgotten. He said, son, if you're going to plow a straight line, you have to look in the distance and you have to find a point, find something that you can focus your eyes on that won't move. So a cow or something like that would not be a good idea. And then you just start plowing towards that point and you get to the end of the row and then you turn around and then you find another point and you plow towards it and you keep doing that, and that's how you plow. Now, it really sounds simple, except I can remember as a kid, I wasn't used to being out in that heat. This was in southwest Louisiana, which was even more humid than what we're experiencing right now. And the heat of the sun and sometimes the wind would get to blowing and that sandy soil would get to blowing. And I just, you know, as a kid, as soon as it stopped being fun, you know, I was ready to go in and get under a shade tree and find something good that Granny had fixed to eat. But you had to just be consistent. And Granddad had a pace about him. He didn't get in a big hurry about anything. But you could never wear that guy down. There's been many a young man who, I think my father learned that when he became introduced to the family. And then as a grandson, I learned that. You know, we'd jump up and we'd get ahead of Granddad and we'd go to working quickly some new rural skill he had taught us that we thought was a great game. And Granddad would just take his time. But then through the heat of the day, all day long, he would just keep going and just keep going. He would never wear out. And I've just always thought about that. So if you're going to plow straight lines, you got to keep looking ahead. And it's not who gets there first. It's who just keeps going and keeps going. There was another parable Jesus referred to in Matthew 13 and verse 22, the parable of the sower and the seed and the different types of soil. And you know, an over-focus on the past, and what we're trying to say this morning is, you know, there's no sense in denying our past. There's no sense pretending it didn't happen. There's no sense wishing it hadn't happened. Again, it happened. And the key is now, how am I going to learn from that and utilize that and move forward into what God has for me? But I know especially traumatic times, especially sorrowful times, maybe produces even a lot of anger and resentment in you or me about why this happened. We can easily become focused on that. Jesus talked about the seed falling among the thorns and referring that to people who hear the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word and make it unfruitful. Now, my focus this morning on this parable is just the worries, the angst, the guilt, the sorrow, the fear, the regrets. It's an amazing thought that we can become so consumed with anxiety and worry and doubt and fear that we can literally choke out what God is wanting to do in our life. And I know none of us wants that to happen. That's not the choice we want to make, but it's very real when we're dealing with things of the past who kind of keep coming at us, and they drain us of our dreams, they drain us of our hopes, they drain us of our energy for the future. And we want to keep moving forward in God. We don't want to become like maybe some people, maybe in our family or friends or acquaintances we have, and they're just dried up. They're bitter. They're angry. They're no fun to be around. You know, all they want to talk about is what happened to them and how unjust it was and this or that, and it just completely drains life all around them. They're just sort of like a black hole. And none of us wants to be that way. We want to be life-giving. It is amazing how you can get around two sets of people who have gone through the same experience. Again, spending time with my grandparents growing up, I was one of those kids who loved to be around adults. Of course, in that generation, children were to be seen and not heard. So if you were going to be around adults, you had to be quiet. So I was willing to be quiet just to hear their stories and hear them. And I would hear different sets of relatives talking, and they'd be talking about how hard the past was. And of course, this generation had gone through the Great Depression. And I hear how one set would talk about how hard it was, and and how easier everybody else had it. But I remember my grandmother and grandfather, who were just simple, very, very simple people. Granddad made a little cash money, was kind of a shade tree carpenter. But other than that, he just kind of made his living just out of that small, relatively small farm. And they would just talk about how even during the Depression, people would spend time together. People would share their food together, share the produce out of their garden together. And they would almost speak about it almost sort of wistfully, how much more people appreciated each other and appreciated the simple things in life. And I always found that interesting, that they had gone through the same experience. But for them, they look back and remember the good and the joy and the simple things that came out of it. And this another set of relatives, all they could focus on was the bad and the difficulty and the anxiety. Well, I want to come to our last point this morning, which is kind of the most difficult, and that's that, some things just don't make any sense. There's just some things that happened in our past, maybe your recent past, and, there's no seemingly answers. There's no closure. This just doesn't make any sense. I don't know why God had to do this, or you get in all these dilemmas. You know, did God let it happen? You know what? Peter, I think, describes something for us that I think helps us. I think when there are no answers, there's something inside of us that wants to make sense, that sees something good, something positive. And with time and perspective and God's grace and God's insight, many times we can see things in the past that at one time we couldn't. But when you're not there yet, when there's no revelation been given, it doesn't make sense and you don't know why, it hurts. And it's really, really tough when there are no answers, no closure, no sense to be made. There was, and I wanted to read something for us, came out, this is a photocopy, but our recent Cutting Edge magazine, and I think we still have some around here, and if you haven't had a chance to get one, please get it. And there's an article in here, it was an interview with a pastor who pastors out at the Anaheim Vineyard. His name is Lance Pitluck. And Lance has been around the vineyard a long time and a great leader of within our movement. But I've heard him allude before in speaking that he lost a small child, a young child, a three-year-old son. And this interview focuses on that and, all the emotional things that he and his wife dealt with. And it's kind of a raw interview. It's good in that he says a lot of times the church means to be helpful. People mean to be helpful, but sometimes they can say really unhelpful things, sometimes really hurtful things. And so anyhow, it's about his, I won't rehash the whole article, but he had this little healthy, active three-year-old son who one Thursday comes down with the flu. They run him into the doctor. Doctor says it's just the flu. He'll get over it. But by Saturday, his breathing was real labored. He became unconscious. And even though they had a nurse living across the street try to resuscitate him, he never came back. They lost him. And said it looked like maybe that he had contracted strep on top of the flu. And that caused him. But whatever the reasons were, I mean, here's this church planner. At that time, had planted a church in the Northeast, I think, about 12 years old. And, what do you do with that? And so I wanted to read sort of the last paragraph out of that interview. These are Lance's words. It says, "There was a crucial point for me at my son's memorial service where I was in the service and some well-meaning person put my son's picture right in front of me. I remember thinking, I have a choice here. I can crawl up inside myself and die, or I can, even though I don't understand this, I can choose to worship. I felt God challenging me to worship. I lifted up one hand. That was about as much as I could get because I couldn't sing. If I opened my mouth, I would start crying. I lifted up my hand, and when I did, I felt the presence of the Lord come on me in a comforting, reassuring way, like there's going to be grace for this. From that point forward, while it wasn't that all the pain went away that day or I was totally okay, but the whole idea of grace being sufficient really ended up sustaining me. I could feel this sustaining grace undergirding and holding me up through the whole thing. You know, one of the things in reading something like that, and of course I chose something like that because that's public information and we're not inviting somebody's privacy or something, and it's like, wow, can't imagine. But one of the good things that's being about community is that when you see God's grace helping someone else go through something that you can't imagine, it encourages you that God's grace can help you get through what you're getting through. And that's why we need each other. And we're not trying to parade our difficulties in front. We're not trying to one-up each other with our difficulties. But it's good to know that God is here for all of us and that he's a big God and he's a good God. But you know, I think all of us have a decision to make. I think all of us want to be open to God most of the time. But I think in general, we really want to be open for God. I know Michael preached last Sunday and asked those who just wanted to open themselves up to more of Christ in their life. You know, none of us here know what this year holds. And we don't have to be afraid. That shouldn't be a fearful statement. That's a true statement. We do not know what this year holds. For us as individuals, for our families, for our community, for friends and acquaintances, but God knows. And so we need more of God. We need more of his grace and more of his mercy in our lives. And there may be something in our past. There may be a season, there may be an episode that as much as we'd like to get past it, we just can't seem to get past it. And there's often a statement that says something like, well, you just need to let go. You just need to let go of the past. Well, that also kind of frustrates us because we say if it was that easy to let go, I would have let go of it a long time ago. But this idea of casting our anxiety, casting whatever that is on him because he cares for you. I like that. I like having something willful and purposeful and strategic to do. And so you cast on God your questions. You cast on God your frustration. You cast on God your sorrow. You cast on God your anger. You cast on God your resentment. And then when you get through casting everything, you cast yourself. You say, God, you're all I've got. You're the only thing that makes sense in the midst of so many things that don't make sense. And I'm going to hold on to you. I'm going to trust in you. I'm going to believe in you. And I want your future for my life. I'm going to close this morning. Yesterday, I was reminded of this in a very different way. There was a wedding that took place here. Joe Diaz and Veronica Rodriguez got married. It was beautiful. Our friend Bill Laswell performed the ceremony and did a great job. And I thought about that. I thought, you know, Joe has a past and Veronica has a past. And I came to find out, I didn't know that they'd actually known each other for about 5 years. And so they even have some past together. But you know, if a marriage is going to make it, you got to keep learning from that past, but you got to keep moving forward. If the past starts dominating the present, then it destroys the future. So in any marriage, we know, there's going to be good days and bad days. There's going to be exciting times and there's going to be hard times. That's part of our vows we made. That was also part of the vows we made when we gave ourselves to Christ. It's going to be good days because there's another marriage that takes place. The church is considered the bride of Christ and he's the bridegroom. And it's not all peaches and cream. And I kind of get a little upset when sometimes Christianity is presented as it's a better deal, it's a better benefit package, it has better perks. That's just vain consumerism. And then when people have something difficult happen, they say, hey, I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up for cancer. I didn't sign up for financial loss. I didn't sign up for hard times. I didn't sign up for no AC in the church. You can tell I'm sensitive about that. But we did. We gave it all because he gave us all. And he didn't promise us a list of benefits and options. He promised us himself. He promised him all the riches of all his creation. And some of us have been around a while and we've had some experiences and we've been around each other enough to see God come and do amazing, miraculous things. And that's the kind of God I want us to be reminded of. That's who we made this lifelong deal with. An amazing God, a good God, a loving God, a God who still has good plans and a good future for his people. I'd like us to stand together this morning, and I'd like our prayer team to come, if they would.